Whenever we enter a movie theater, our sense of time is almost sure to be manipulated. One cut can jump decades. Bullets sometimes stop and linger on screen like drips of water. But what can those leaps in cinematic time reveal about our own real day-to-day experience? We asked three film critics to dissect how some filmmakers have played with time in their recent movies.
When we were studying film theory, there was a famous essay we read by this guy Stephen Heath, who's a well-known film theorist, and the quote at the beginning was something like, "It is precise to say that events take place." But I think it's more precise to say that events take time.
You know, Hitchcock said there were movies, but life with the dull bits cut out.
The way that time moves is often through narrative. When you think about your life, for example, you narrativize it. You see it as a story. It started back there in the past, and then it moves through a series of events that we tell as stories. And that's exactly what cinema does.
Time is conventionalized. We know when a flashback is happening. We know that we have skipped certain events, and we go into this fictional time zone.
One of the first things a filmmaker learns or realizes is that he's dealing with time.
You really need a system if you're going to make it work. You kind of learn to trust your own handwriting.
I think one of the things that's interesting about Christopher Nolan's Memento is the fact that it plays with the notion of amnesia.
No!
We begin with a character committing an assault on someone. We don't know why.
Well, that's the thing. I have this condition.
A condition?
It's my memory.
Amnesia?
No. It's different from that. I have no short-term memory.
And then the scenes unfurl in reverse time. At the end of each successive scene, he gives you the beginning of the previous scene. So we're just as hamstrung in a way as Guy Pearce is.
Film noir traditionally is about a main male character who is disoriented.
No one is trustworthy.
Memento is a sort of contemporary version of noir, and it pushes that to an extreme.
He's sort of subject to the manipulation of the people around him, and I think that's a perfect example of what critics fear is happening to us as a culture, that we're becoming people who are easily manipulated by the media around us because we don't have long-term memory, we don't have a sense of history. Everything is always about the present and the immediate.
Run, Lola, Run, which Tom Tykwer made and released in 1999, tells the same story three different times.
So here, Lola is running to try and stop Manny before he goes into the market to try and hold it up. And
we actually have a split screen here with Lola running with the bag that's going to save her boyfriend.
Manny! He hears her and turns, and now the split screen has dissolved. He's putting his gun away.
You can feel the tension is rising, not only from the music, but from their imminent meeting. And, oh, a big red truck came between Lola and Manny and took Manny out.
What the director does is stop the story after the first sequence and, in a sense, roll back and let her do the task again with a different outcome.
We see here the story starting again with the phone dropping onto the hook, and she runs out of the room. And
it's almost as if her desire to have the event happen differently transforms the event, and it's almost as if our desire to have her succeed transforms the event as well.
To me, it felt like a video game. You get killed fighting the aliens, well, you just start the game from scratch again.
She becomes a cartoon at a certain point, and cartoon characters, we know, they die, and then they get up, and they start going again.
Even though she's not conscious that she's doing it again, there's, I think, as viewers, the desire to be able to go back and replay, to do it right, to make changes. But I also think that it again plays into ideas that are very culturally present, such as sampling and the loop, and this interest in sort of redoing and remaking, recycling images and sequences, and the sense that no repetition is ever pure. Each repetition is always slightly different. There's never the pure repetition because it's always in a different place and time. Something has happened.
You know, Hitchcock said there were movies, but life with the dull bits cut out. In Time Code, Mike Figgis is leaving everything in.
In Time Code, Mike Figgis takes a single story and follows four paths of that story in real time with four different cameras.
Four images like
two women
at once.
Riding in a car, riding in a cab. One of them's reading a newspaper.
He takes his film frame and divides it into four parts and shows each of the strands of the story that are told through each of the four camera crews.
Simultaneously.
And he directs our attention through the sound mix.
What you're hearing is an earthquake in Los Angeles.
Now it looks like the earthquake is happening, and all four different...
We had some nice shaky cam there.
...character scenarios are responding to the earthquake.
Right, they're all experiencing the earthquake simultaneously.
As people, we understand our stories to be sort of linear and kind of unique. But right next to my story is your story. Next to your story is someone else's story. And your story is intersecting with all of these other stories. So there's a sense that there's no way, one, that time can be linear, and two, that we should even understand time in that way, because that's not how it works.
Rashomon seems like a strong historical precedent for this kind of film.
Time Code is saying that there are multiple times. Similarly, I think when we look at the news or when we're online and we have multiple windows open on our computer, there's a sense that all of this stuff is happening simultaneously. And if you think about it, Mike Figgis' film Time Code has a similar sense of windows on a computer screen. It's almost a desktop aesthetic or something where, you know, you're seeing these multiple things and everything. We're doing all of these things at the same time. I don't know, it's almost as though we're beginning to embody these kind of multiple simultaneities in how we're functioning in our everyday lives.
This element of chronology and of the film taking time in our lives and taking up time is more invisible than invisible editing or invisible composition that draws us into the fiction. When we were studying film theory, there was a famous essay we read by this guy Stephen Heath, who's a well-known film theorist, and the quote at the beginning was something like, "It is precise to say that events take place." But I think it's more precise to say that events take time.
We heard from David Lederman, a film critic at the College of San Mateo, Holly Willis, the editor of Res magazine, and Michael Fox, a film critic for the San Francisco Weekly. Our piece was produced by Jonathan Mitchell.